Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, May 29th, 2025. On this, the last Thursday in the month, I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the obituaries. Now, today's list only includes one name, Cynthia Camrath, 65, of Glendale. And we extend our condolences to the families and friends of Cynthia's. Then we're going to turn to the business section of the paper. And there we have, looks like, three articles. The first one is entitled, FDA Pauses Company's Gene Therapy Trial. This was written by Kamal Chaudhuri and Christy Santhos from Reuters News Group. The Food and Drug Administration has paused Rocket Pharmaceuticals' mid-stage gene therapy trial after a patient died from serious complications, according to the drug developer on May 27th. The decision was made on May 23rd, after the patient, treated in early May, faced difficulties due to capillary leak syndrome, in which blood vessels leak fluids and proteins, causing swelling and low blood pressure. The company was testing its experimental gene therapy called RP-A501 for treating Danon disease. Now, Danon disease is a rare genetic disorder that causes heart muscle damage and progressive muscle weakness. The company said it was investigating the cause of death with a focus on a new immune suppression agent that was recently added to the treatment regimen in order to enhance patient safety. The immune suppressor was administered to two patients, and both of them showed capillary leak syndrome. CEO Gaurav Shah said that Rocket is, quote, carefully evaluating whether a mechanism related to the new agent may have influenced immune responses in an unexpected or paradoxical way, unquote. The incident supports the notion that serious safety events are unpredictable with gene therapies, making it a challenge to invest in them broadly. In March, Sarepta Therapeutics had reported that a teen died after receiving its gene therapy for muscular dystrophy. Rocket declined to provide a timeline for completing the trial until the hold is lifted, and it said it is working with the FDA and experts. Now, the FDA did not respond to Reuters' request for comment. And that was FDA Pauses Company's Gene Therapy Trial. Our second one is Summer Vacations May Differ in This Economy by Eve Chen for the USA Today. Less may be more when it comes to summer vacations this year. While travelers are still planning to get away, many are shifting their destinations or their trip duration and other factors amid the economic uncertainty. As on May 28th to May 1st survey of 2,000 U.S. adults commissioned by members-only home swapping community Kindred, it found that 90% were actively looking for ways to save on summer travel. USA Today reviewed various industry reports to glean the biggest trends among the expected travelers this summer. Now, top summer destinations, well, there were no surprises among the most popular destinations this summer. It includes a mix of international and domestic cities. Skyscanner's Smarter Summer Report includes Tokyo, London, New York, Rome, and Los Angeles in the top five. Kayak's Summer Travel Check also has Tokyo, London, and Rome in its top five, but instead put Paris and Orlando instead of New York and Los Angeles. Kayak also notes that international flights are 11% cheaper to Asia, they're down 8% to Europe, and 5% lower to Africa this summer compared to last summer. However, according to Airbnb's summer travel trends, nearly 40% of Americans will or are likely to stick to domestic destinations to save money instead of going abroad. Airbnb adds that nearly 30% of Americans with kids 18 or younger living at home are planning staycations instead of going elsewhere, or will very likely do so. So, what are the cheapest periods to travel? Well, Skyscanner found that Wednesdays are generally the cheapest day to travel, and the cheapest week to travel is August 25th through the 31st. Travelers who wait to fly in August may find better deals than for June and July, according to Kayak. However, it said that those planning trips around summer holidays will find the cheapest outbound flights on Tuesday, July 1st, ahead of Independence Day, and on Saturday, August 30th, ahead of Labor Day. So, should I drive or fly to my destination? Well, to save money, some travelers are skipping flights and hitting the road. Of more than 2,800 U.S. travelers surveyed for Deloitte's 2025 Summer Travel Survey, 22% said they plan to drive instead of fly this summer due to airfares. So, where do people stay when they're traveling? Deloitte reports that 80% of the travelers plan to stay in hotels. 25% plan to stay in private rentals at least once this summer. Now, both of those numbers are up from last year. But nearly 25% plan to stay with friends or family in order to save money. And that was the article, Summer Vacations May Differ in This Economy. Our third article from the business section, Trade War Has Retailers Considering Going Private. This is by Abigail Somervia from the Reuters News Group out of New York. Boards and the owners of retailers whose shares have been pummeled by President Donald Trump's trade war are increasingly warming to offers to sell and to escape the market chaos that has caused company valuations to seesaw in recent months. Following sneaker maker Skechers' take private deal earlier in May, dealmakers expect other retailers to clinch their own deals to go private in the near term, especially if Trump doesn't soon settle on a more stable trade policy, according to interviews with 10 investment bankers and M&A lawyers. Retailers in particular have been hard hit by Trump's rapidly shifting tariff announcements and are frustrated with an inability to provide earnings guidance. Skechers was in talks with investment firm 3G Capital long before its market value began a precipitous drop from an all-time high of around $11.85 billion on January 30th. That's the day before the White House announced its first round of tariffs against China. The flood of tariff announcements beat the company's value down to about $7.4 billion by the end of April. Now, Skechers, which manufactures most of its goods in China and Vietnam, pulled its 2025 earnings guidance around that time, citing, quote, macroeconomic uncertainty stemming from global trade policies, unquote. Skechers is majority owned by the Greenberg family. The tariff turmoil made the idea of going private all the more attractive to the Greenbergs, according to sources who asked not to be named because the negotiations were private. So the company announced plans on May 5th to sell to 3G Capital in a so-called take-private deal for about $9.4 billion. Selling to a privately held firm like 3G Capital removes the company's shares from public exchanges, which effectively shields its earnings from public scrutiny and protects its valuation from unpredictable market swings. Skechers declined to comment. Other retailers are already in talks to sell to investment firms and other companies, according to sources. Kurt Anthony, who's the head of consumer and retail investment banking for the Americas at UBS, said, quote, "The breakneck pace of the instability, the volatility, and the macro changes have made board members start thinking, would it be better to manage this business in private, where we don't have to report out to the street with the same quarterly cadence, and where we can control operational, financial, and capital allocation decisions in private?" Unquote. Few industries have been hit harder by Trump's tariffs than retailers, many of which manufacture most of their goods overseas and have had to pull earnings guidance amid the fickle foreign policy. So after de-escalating his trade war, Trump on May 23rd levied fresh threats against Apple and the European Union, sending markets that had mostly recovered from his initial trade moves reeling once again. The S&P Retail Select Industry Index has fallen by 6% year-to-date as of the market close on March 23rd, while the broader S&P 500 index has fallen 1.1% in the same period. Jamie Salter, CEO of Authentic Brands Group, said, quote, "There are a lot of CEOs that have reached out to me and said, I'm tired. I love what I do, but maybe it's time I go private," unquote. The company, which owns the intellectual property of several apparel companies, including Reebok and Champion, acquired Dockers IP from Levi's last week. Quote, "I think you're going to see good companies either stay private or go private," unquote, Jamie said. And companies where a family, as in the case of Skechers, or a single investor has a controlling stake, can sign these deals faster and more easily than those that need broad shareholder approval. Investment bankers and advisors pointed to other retailers with similar ownership structures as potential take-private targets. Under Armour, where founder and CEO Kevin Plank has majority voting control. Columbia Sportswear Company, where the chairman and CEO Timothy Boyle and his family are the biggest shareholders. Birkenstock, with private equity firm L. Catterton holding a majority stake. Under Armour, Columbia, Birkenstock, and L. Catterton did not respond to request for comment. Now, in Skechers' case, navigating the market uncertainty in private makes sense to the father and son duo, Robert Greenberg, who is chairman and CEO, and Michael Greenberg, president, according to the two people who are familiar with the family's thinking. And a buyer like 3G, which has held some investments for over a decade, can afford to ride out the short-term tariff and market volatility compared with the traditional private equity firms that tend to hold their investments for a handful of years. That's the article, Trade War Has Retailers Considering Going Private. We're coming up on 14 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the sports section. On the front page of the sports section, at the very top of the page, there is a picture. Diamondbacks starting pitcher Zach Gallen reacts after being stepped on at first base by the Pittsburgh Pirates' O'Neill Cruz in the first inning on May 28th at Chase Field. So there's Zach. He's kind of bent over at the waist. He's, got his hands on his knees. There's an ump out there next to him. The catcher's out there. And the relief pitcher looks like, or maybe it's, I'm not sure who that is, but they're walking off of the mound. And the title underneath the picture is Fading Fast. This was written by Nick Pecoro for the Arizona Republic. There are days during the season when Diamondbacks manager Tory Lavullo will arrive for his post-game session with reporters ready to rattle off all the things that his team did well. This was not one of them. Lavullo said, quote, "We're as far from that as we have been in quite some time," unquote. Facing flame-throwing right-hander Paul Skeens, the Diamondbacks were beaten handily on Wednesday afternoon, May 28th, falling 10-1 to the Pittsburgh Pirates, who claimed the rubber match of their three-game series. For the Diamondbacks, it was a lifeless and uninspiring performance against one of the bottom feeders of the National League. Second baseman Jordan Lawler played a second consecutive game in place of an under-the-weather Ketel Marte, made two errors in the field. Outfielders missed cutoff men with their throws. Corbin Carroll slammed his bat in frustration after a fly out late in the game. The Diamondbacks were shut down by Skeens, who allowed just four hits, walked none, and struck out seven in 6 2/3 innings. If their loss the night before was the gut punch, that's where they blew a 6-0 lead in their 9-6 defeat, this was a sort of a finishing shot, a kick them while they're down day that dropped them to a season worst 2 games under .500. Their record is now 27 wins and 29 losses. Lovullo said, quote, "You ask me for answers. I don't know what the answers are. We just got to continue to believe, continue to fight. We've had a bad week of work. That's how I'm going to chalk it up," unquote. The loss was the Diamondbacks' seventh in their past eight games. They are 7 games out of the National League West and 4.5 games back in the wild card race. Both right-hander Zach Gallen, who gave up 6 runs in 5-plus innings, and Lovullo wondered if the frustration from the night before carried over. Lovullo said his team, quote, "looked like it saw a ghost," unquote, around the 7th inning, not long after the Pirates exploded for a 5-run 6th inning to take control of the game. Lovullo said, quote, "I don't blame them. I think we're all frustrated. I think there was a little bit of a hangover from being 6 outs away from finishing a game last night that we couldn't finish out. We've got to flush it," unquote. For Gallen, the outing extended a string of poor starts from the club's longtime ace. He has given up 20 runs in 21 1/3 innings over his past 4 starts. He has issued 11 walks in that span, including 3 more against the Pirates, all of them to lead off innings, all of which led to runs. Gallen said, quote, "From a clubhouse standpoint, I think we know we have a lot more talent. We are a better baseball team than how we're playing right now. It's kind of very uncharacteristic of us the last couple of weeks. It starts with me, really. I'm not giving us a chance to win when I'm out there. We've got a lot of talent in this clubhouse, a really good culture. We've had our struggles before in years where we kind of finished on a pretty good note. We've got to get into gear. I get that it's still a third of the way into the season, so you don't want to overreact, but time is ticking," unquote. The loss to the Pirates are the latest unfathomable defeats the Diamondbacks have suffered this season. Every week, it seems a new game emerges as the one they will most regret come October. But at this pace, it won't be just one game that cost them a chance at the postseason. They lost a game in which they scored 10 runs in the 8th inning. They lost 2 other games in which they scored at least 11 runs, including a game to the Colorado Rockies team that is on pace for 27 wins. They also lost a game in which Eugenio Suarez clobbered 4 home runs. Their loss in the series finale was perhaps not as egregious as those. They faced Skeens, after all, but it was still ugly. Lovullo said, quote, "Nothing against the Pirates, but I think they went a month without scoring 5 runs in a game. They did that twice in 1 inning against us. That's unacceptable. We are better than that." If you're asking for the top thing that makes me frustrated, teams batting around against our staff and we're getting bullied around the baseball field, I don't like it at all, unquote. Lovullo was thankful the club has an off day on the calendar before opening a 3-game series against the Washington Nationals on May 30th. Lavulo said, "We've got to flush it. We've got to get through it," unquote. And that was fading fast. Our second article, Thomas Rookies Lead Late Comeback. This was written by Jenna Ortiz and Dana Scott for the Arizona Republic. Phoenix Mercury head coach Nate Tibbetts was nervous about how his team would look without their star, Kalia Copper, but the Mercury's comeback wins have told him otherwise. The Mercury's latest triumph was fueled by Alyssa Thomas and their four rookies as the Mercury erased a 16-point deficit to win 94-89 over the Chicago Sky on Tuesday, May 27th at Phoenix Arena. Satu Sabali led the Mercury with 20 points, followed by Kit Lox's career-high 18 points. Thomas posted a game-high 15 assists, 10 points, and 7 rebounds. Tibbetts said, quote, "No one was more in shock when Ka got hurt because I thought she had an amazing training camp. And seeing her that's Alyssa Thomas, Sabu, and Satu play off each other, it was pretty to watch. So I'm excited for where we're headed," unquote. Tibbetts added that the team's wins have mattered without Copper and Natasha Mack, two key players from training camp. Without those two in the lineup, several people have stepped up in place. One area of emphasis has been three-point shooting. The Mercury's 40 three-point attempts were a credit to the group's understanding of what Tibbetts wants the offense to look like. The three-point shooting came up big as the Mercury relied on its offense to close out in the fourth quarter. They shot 7 of 11 from beyond the arc. Monique Okoa-Makani led the Mercury with 9 points on 3 three-pointers during the quarter. The Mercury struggled to get shots to fall in the first half, shooting just 31%, and were down by as much as 11 in the first half. The Sky's lead grew in the third quarter with a 9-0 run that put them ahead by as many as 16 points. Guard Ariel Atkins was unstoppable on the wing, sinking 7 of her 10 shots for 19 points through her first 20 minutes. The Sky's three-point shooting was quiet in the first quarter, but they heated up with Kia Nurses going 4-for-7 in the last three quarters. Atkins led all scorers with 21 points, while Angel Reese posted a double-double with 15 rebounds and 13 points. Akoa Makani's hook shot, with 5 minutes and 41 seconds left in the third quarter, kick-started a crucial 9-0 run that got the Mercury within striking distance. Center Camila Cardoso, who had 16 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 assists, got into foul trouble with her fourth foul midway through the quarter. And the Sky did not let up offensively, but Lox's 8 points on 2 of 3 shooting in that period helped the Mercury close the gap. Lox's driving layup with 28 seconds left got the Mercury within 3 points. Sabala gained the lead for the first time since 6 minutes and 52 seconds in the first quarter, with 6 minutes and 58 seconds left in the fourth, after earning a second-chance layup to lead 74-73. The Sky challenged the Mercury, but the Mercury's offense overruled the Sky's counterattack. Catherine Westveld, who had 3 three-pointers in the game, had a huge block on Courtney Vandersloot's driving layup with 2 minutes and 15 seconds left for a big stop. Thomas followed up with a diving layup for a 7-point lead. Loxa said, quote, "It shows that we're ready to fight and come back. It's not ideal to get ourselves in trouble in the first place, but I think it shows we're capable of coming back, and we're fighters, and we're not going to back down and let it go," unquote. The Mercury will have its biggest test of the season with the Minnesota Lynx on Friday, May 30th at PXHX Arena at 7 p.m. The Minnesota Lynx are 5-0. And that was the article, Thomas and Rookies Lead Late Comeback. Our third article from the front page of the sports section. Key Cardinals stars absent from first day of OTAs, written by Theo Mackey for the Arizona Republic. So So when the Arizona Cardinals took the field on May 28th for the first of 9 off-season organized team practices, or OTAs, they were without some notable pieces. Among the players not seen at practice were the edge rushers Josh Sweet and B.J. Ogilary, defensive tackles Calais Campbell, Dalvin Tomlinson, and Bilal Nichols, and offensive linemen Hajalt Froholt and Kevin Beecham. Ogilary tore his ACL in training camp on August 2nd, so his absence did not come as a surprise. And the same goes for Nichols, who suffered a season-ending neck injury in October. The 38-year-old Campbell and the 35-year-old Beecham were also logical absences. Froholt, meanwhile, posted on social media from Phase 2 of the off-season programming, which featured individual workouts, indicating that his absence may have been an aberration. Sweet and Tomlinson, both of whom signed with the Cards in free agency, were the most surprising players missing on May 28th. Sweet inked a 4-year, $76.4 million deal, while Tomlinson will make $29 million over 2 years. Head coach Jonathan Gannon, though, was not bothered by the absences. Each of the Cardinals' 3 practices this week and next week are optional. They then have 3 days of mandatory minicamp from June 10th, 11th, and 12th, before breaking until the training camp begins in late July. Gannon said before practice, quote, "Because it is voluntary, I ask them, just communicate with me. Our guys have done an excellent job communicating with me, so that's good to see," unquote. Gannon was not available after practice to discuss specific absences, which also included 2 notable players working on the side of the field, away from team drills. Jonah Williams, who suffered a season-ending knee injury in December, worked with trainers in a T-shirt and shorts. First-round pick Walter Nolan also worked with trainers, although he was wearing a jersey and pads. Nolan, along with second-round pick Will Johnson, has not yet signed his rookie contract. Unlike Nolan, Johnson did take part in team drills. The other 5 draft picks have all signed their contracts. Now, in his rookie season, the Cardinals deployed Marvin Harrison Jr. with a heavy dosage of downfield routes. Of his 116 targets, 30 came on go routes or fades, 2 routes that essentially asked receivers to run directly downfield. That was the 2nd highest number in the NFL, behind only Malik Nabers. But Harrison was not particularly effective on those plays. He hauled in just 6 catches on those 30 targets for 114 yards. But this offseason, the Cardinals did not add a field-stretching wide receiver, a player who could have, in theory, relieved Harrison of some of that downfield burden. So, on May 28th, offensive coordinator Drew Petsing was asked whether he still envisions using Harrison on those types of routes. Petsing said, quote, "Absolutely. I think if you look at his skill set, there's not a lot of things I'm going to tell you he can't do. So stretch the field, play underneath, play in the slot, move around the formation, play outside. I think that's what makes him so dynamic," unquote. The first year of Darius Robinson's NFL career was, in his words, quote, "the hardest year of my life, but then it was the best year of my life in the same year," unquote. He realized his professional dream by being selected in the first round of the NFL draft. He also suffered a personal tragedy, losing his mom, Valori, in October. At the same time, he dealt with a nagging calf injury that delayed his NFL debut by 11 weeks, a process that left him frustrated, stuck on the sidelines, unable to contribute. And when he returned, he only sporadically flashed the talent that made him the 27th overall pick. The arrival of the offseason, then, provided Robinson with a chance to breathe. Freed from the daily grind of the season, he finally had some time to process it all. Robinson said, quote, "going back to Michigan, taking care of some family stuff, trying to get closure with everything with my mom, but also thinking about this season and just replaying, I only played 6 games, but just constantly rethinking about those 6 games and thinking about what I need to do to make that next jump in my game, unquote. So, as part of that process, he thought back to training camp, when he felt hot and ready to contribute. When he returned, he said, it was just cool. So since Robinson returned to Arizona, his focus has been on recreating that hot feeling. He added considerable bulk, although he declined to say exactly how much weight he put on. But more than anything, he feels that his 6 games in the NFL have prepared him to understand what it is required to succeed. He said, quote, at my lowest, I kept showing up each day. I kept fighting in the pursuit of my dreams. And I realize it can't get worse than that. So honestly, just keep putting one foot in front of another and just go. Just really enjoy this. It's a blessing being here. And that was the article, Key Cardinals Stars Absent from First Day of OTAs. Well, we're at 31 minutes, and we finished the first page of the sports section. Let's open up the sports section, see if there's a couple more articles in there. Well, here is an article. ALA Queen Creek quarterback embracing June tourneys, written by Richard Obert for the Arizona Republic. The games are short, the reps become monumental, and the time to shine for Arizona high school quarterbacks is June. That is especially true when they hit the college showcases, such as those that will be held at Arizona State and Arizona and Northern Arizona campuses. For Britt DeWitt, who will be entering his final high school season in a few months as quarterback at American Leadership Academy Queen Creek, this summer, 7-on-7 tournaments present another chance to prove that he is capable of playing football at a big-time college. It's all about getting in sync with receivers, reading defenses, letting loose, making mistakes, and maybe catching the eye of a major college coach. Arizona's 3 universities host 7-on-7 tournaments in June that will be viewed by the university football coaching staffs. DeWitt is a quality Arizona high school quarterback for a program that has steadily shaped itself into a perennial playoff team. But he remains under the radar. His only Division I offer came from Idaho during ALA Queen Creek's spring showcase. He was forced to sit out the first half of last season after transferring from Queen Creek Castile as required by AIA rules. That's one reason his recruiting may be lagging, even after shredding Chandler Bash's secondary in the Open Division 40-35 state semifinal loss. In that coming-of-age moment for that 6-foot-2-inch 190-pounder, DeWitt completed 31 of 39 passes for 377 yards and 5 TDs with 1 interception. He also had a 34-yard run on 4th and 12 during the final last-minute drive, and he has a quarterback rating of 137.5. That happened on November 30th. DeWitt said on May 24th, while attending the Gotta Believe 7-on-7 tournament at Mesa Dobson High, quote, I really knew I could do that the whole time. It's just to prove to other people, prove to myself I am who I am, and I know what I think I am. I think I put people on notice, unquote. Still, the next 5 months passed by with no offers. That was just extra motivation to get in the weight room and on the field to work with his receivers, a couple of whom are new, in order to get ready for the 2025 season. The Patriots feel they can continue to make open division strides. DeWitt said, quote, it's just about getting better as a team and put us in the best position possible, unquote. DeWitt feels there's more he can do to show recruiters that he's worth their time, even during this new era that has seen more colleges rely on the transfer portal to reload their rosters with established college players. That trend has come at the expense of high school recruits, as more top senior prep quarterbacks get passed over by power institutions who can find immediate help in the portal. DeWitt's coach says he possesses qualities that a lot of college coaches desire. ALA Queen Creek coach Rich Edwards said about DeWitt, quote, his poise is just off the charts. He doesn't get rattled. He doesn't get sped up. He stands in there and makes great decisions, unquote. As DeWitt juggled volleyball season with May spring football, helping the Patriots win the 5A state volleyball title as an outside hitter, many college football coaches who came through told Edwards that they were already done recruiting 2026 quarterbacks and that they were already on to the 2027 class. Edwards said, quote, he kind of got a late start, but that spring showcase was really key. We had Washington State and Washington and BYU. It's starting to pick up, but they're hesitating because they've already got their 2026 quarterbacks. ALA Queen Creek offensive coordinator Max Hall, a former BYU quarterback, said he thrust DeWitt into his first game action last season in the second half against Gilbert Highland on October 25th. And that's when he completed 7 of 12 for 105 yards and a touchdown in that 26-7 win. Hall said, quote, the offense changed. Everything was different. Everything started clicking. There was more energy. He just rode that, unquote. The next week, in the 22-10 win over Williams Field, he was 18 of 24 for 188 yards. He followed that going 17 of 25 for 187 yards and two TDs in the rout of the rival Queen Creek by a score of 42-7. He broke out for 295 yards and a TD in an open division 20-14 playoff win over Scottsdale Desert Mountain. That was before his breakout game against Basha. Hall said, quote, he showed me in that Basha game that he does have the whole package. I'm really excited this year. We've got a couple of new receivers who are going to be good weapons, unquote. Khalil Bender transferred from Tempe McClintock, where he caught 64 passes for 1,000 yards and 9 TDs. Braylon Casper, who will be a junior, transferred over the winter break from Williams Field, where he caught 11 passes for 231 yards and 4 TDs in a sophomore season that was shortened to 5 games due to an injury. Bender, who had a great quarterback last season at McClintock and Jackson Knutson, said, quote, I'm excited to play with him, too. Our offense rides off how the defense is playing us. He's very good at reading the defense and finding the open guys, unquote. Casper is excited about this offense. He said, quote, we've been working a lot. Britt's a great quarterback. We have a great offense and team rapport coming in. We've been building a strong relationship, unquote. So after winning its first ever open game last year, DeWitt feels this team can take it a step further. DeWitt said, quote, I just have to be the leader, like, hey guys, let's get going. Just making sure we all get better every single day, unquote. And that was the article, ALA Queen Creek QB Embracing June Tourneys. And here's another article about Arizona sports. Former GCU star Grant Foster announces move to Gonzaga. Written by Richard Obert. Tyon Grant Foster apparently is counting on one more senior night in his college basketball career. He went through the past two at Grand Canyon. But the 6'7" wing announced on social media on Wednesday, May 28th, that he is signing with Gonzaga out of the transfer portal. Grant Foster, who is 25, who started his college career in 2018, will need a waiver from the NCAA to play for the national power. The WAC Player of the Year in 2023-24, his first season in 2 years playing college basketball, led the Lopes to their first NCAA tournament win, averaging 20 points a game. Grant Foster started his career at a junior college playing 2 years at Indian Hills in Iowa. After playing the 2020-2021 season at Kansas, he transferred to DePaul, where his career was derailed after playing the first half of the season opener. Grant Foster collapsed in the locker room at halftime and had to have his heart shocked back into rhythm twice in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. He underwent 2 heart surgeries. And after finally becoming medically cleared, he accepted a scholarship offer from GCU. He had a senior night at GCU that season, believing his next move would be the NBA. But after going through workouts in front of NBA personnel, he returned to GCU for another season. He had to sit out the first 2 games before becoming eligible. Last season ended with a blowout loss to Maryland in the first round of the NCAA tournament in Seattle. An injury during the second half of the WAC season ended any chance of repeating as Conference Player of the Year. Grant Foster returned for the WAC tournament, helping the Lopes capture their 4th championship in 5 years. He averaged 14.8 points per game, 5.9 rebounds, and 2.1 assists last season. To gain 1 more year of college eligibility, Grant Foster could apply the Diego Pavia case. The Vanderbilt quarterback last November sued the NCAA, arguing his 2 junior college seasons shouldn't count against his Division I eligibility. A judge found that the NCAA violated antitrust law by counting junior college playing time toward Division I eligibility, which impacted his name, image, and likeness potential. And that's the article, Former GCU Star Grant Foster Announces Move to Gonzaga. Well, we're coming up on 42 minutes past the hour. Time for us to look for an opinion piece to read. We have Lori Roberts' column. It's entitled, Ye Ready to Go to Battle Against Horn. But is Hoffman the best ally? Senator Jake Hoffman is big mad that Arizona Superintendent Tom Horn is refusing to lay out taxpayer money for such academic imperatives as $16,000 cellos and $5,000 Rolex watches and $24,000 golf simulators. So mad, in fact, that he has recruited State Treasurer Kimberly Yee to challenge Horn in next year's Republican primary. Yee, in announcing her campaign on May 28, said, quote, Arizona children, families, and teachers deserve a state superintendent who will deliver real results, and that includes someone who will fight to protect their educational freedom, unquote. Yee and Horn will battle it out to prove who is the Trumpiest of them all, probably never acknowledging the irony. They were the only 2 Republicans to actually win their statewide races in 2022. That's because they were also the only 2 who were not endorsed by President Donald Trump, and thus weren't weighed down in a general election by all of that MAGA baggage. It's highly unusual for a prominent Republican to primary a Republican officeholder. Yee is term-limited as treasurer. She will be a formidable candidate, having received more votes than any other contested candidate in 2022. But she may be showing a soft underbelly if she aligns herself too closely with Hoffman, who introduced her during her May 28th press conference. Hoffman is chairman of the legislature's ultra-conservative Arizona Freedom Caucus and the self-assigned kingmaker of the hard right, conferring the MAGA brand on Republicans that he deems sufficiently conservative to serve. So when you see Maricopa County Recorder Justin Heap, think Hoffman. When you see State Representative Alexander Colladan running for Secretary of State next year, think Hoffman. Representative Andy Biggs running for governor? Yep, Hoffman, all over it. And now Yee. In April, Hoffman decreed that Horn was, quote, the greatest single threat, unquote, to the Republicans' universal school voucher program, and vowed to find a more conservative candidate to run against him in the August 2026 GOP primary. Hoffman wrote on X, quote, Arizona needs a strong, pro-school choice candidate for this very important office. I am working on identifying that candidate now, unquote. Hoffman took aim at Horn, not because the incumbent superintendent does not support the state's Universal Empowerment Scholarship account. He's a staunch supporter of the program. But Horn's Department of Education has dared to propose limits on how our money may be spent by those holding those empowerment scholarship accounts. And that enrages those on the far right. Oh, no more multi-person kayaks, no more smartwatches or dinner subscriptions or memberships to Amazon Prime, no more dog training or espresso machines. 12 News' Craig Harris this week is reporting on some of the more outrageous cash requests that Horn is rejecting. Among them was a $24,000 golf simulator, a $5,000 Rolex, a $2,295 freeze dryer, and, now wait for it, he also objected to or rejected a vasectomy testing kit. One family requested $65,333 from the ESA accounts of its six children, to purchase 109 laptops, computers, and tablets. And then there was the Gilbert father, who wanted us to lay out $16,170 for a cello, because anything less would damage or destroy his son's musical talent. Harris dug out records showing that same family previously snagged ESA funding for a piano, a commercial KitchenAid mixer, private fitness lessons, a kayak, and Chinese calligraphy and painting lessons. Now, Horn is actually smart to go after the excesses rather than waiting for them to bring the program crashing down. But the ESA lobby, it doesn't see it that way. So now comes Hoffman's pick for state superintendent, Kimberly Yee, a traditionally conservative Republican who, like so many before her, will now likely grit her teeth and bend the knee to self-important jerks like Hoffman. She's done it before. Yee was all in for Trump when she announced her re-election bid in 2022, but Trump never endorsed her, and she was shunned by Carrie Lake and the rest of the America First slate. So instead of centering her campaign as they did on Trump's grievances, Yee ran a quiet, traditional Republican race focused on financial policies. Instead of belittling moderate Republicans and independents, she courted them. And it paid off. Yee wrote after her 2022 double-digit win, quote, "As a Republican, conservative principles guide my approach to governance. I believe we should get back to the old-fashioned way of civil discourse and respect for others, even in our differences," unquote. Well, that certainly doesn't sound like anything Hoffman would say, ever. The challenge for Yee now will be how to align with Hoffman and the hard right in order to win the Republican primary election without shredding her chances in November when everybody gets to vote. And, of course, how to explain, with an actual straight face, the academic imperative for the public to foot the bill for $16,000 cellos. Democrats must be racing for the popcorn. As for Horn, well, he's probably racing for the bathroom. And that was Lori Roberts' opinion piece. Yee, ready to go to battle against Horn, but is Hoffman her best ally? And that was today's opinion piece. At 49 minutes past the hour, it's time for us to move on over to the entertainment section. Let's begin by reading today's horoscopes. So we will begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Are you waiting for news to arrive? Messages or information that you have been anticipating trickle in. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, financial clarity is available to you now, gaining fresh perspectives on how to handle your money and resources. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, you are here, you are there, you are everywhere. Mercury, moving to join the Sun, puts you in motion, go out and connect. For Cancer, birthdays from June 22nd through July 22nd, ideas are rushing in at lightning speed today. Do you need to lock yourself away and unpack these intuitive inspirations? For Leos, birthdays from July 23rd through August 22nd, are you engaging with your community? Sharing knowledge is a highlight of the day. For you fellow Virgos out there, birthdays from August 23rd through September 22nd, a reputation boost is heading your way. Mercury meeting the Sun puts you in the spotlight. For Libras, birthdates from September 23rd through October 23rd, every interaction turns philosophical today. Getting into life's big questions, Mercury meeting the Sun aims to broaden your thinking. For Scorpio, October 24th through November 21st birthdates, are you experiencing a psychological breakthrough? As Mercury moves to meet the Sun today, it sets the stage for a powerful mental shift. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birthdates, are you striking a deal? Grab a pen, sign on the dotted line. Contracts come together as Mercury joins the Sun. For Capricorn, December 22nd through January 19th birthdates, your mind is on fire. So what detail work needs your attention? Because clarity and precision reign. For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birthdates, are you feeling feisty? Your wit is top-notch today. Go around entertaining everyone you meet. And finally, Pisces, birthdates from February 19th to March 20th. Express yourself on the home front. Need to have a conversation with a family member or roommate? Well, today's the day. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. First letter goes like this. Dear Abby, we have an annual weekend family reunion that includes family and significant others along with their children. Most of the children are adults now. One of them, my niece, was recently married and is asking if her new husband's sister and possibly her boyfriend can come to the reunion. We don't have anyone other than immediate family attend, although we do have a special attendee this year. My brother-in-law's mother is here from South America. She will be coming only for the day rather than the whole weekend. How do I politely refuse my niece's request without hurting her feelings? Signed, More or Merrier. Dear M or M, an exception has already been made for your brother-in-law's mother. I'm not sure you can refuse to include your niece's new husband's sister and possibly her boyfriend this time around without causing hurt feelings. Throw a few more hot dogs on the grill. Cross your fingers that everyone will have a good time just this once. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, I've been married for 34 years. My husband often accuses me of having cheated on him and being disrespectful to him throughout our marriage. I have said some things in ways I agree were disrespectful, especially after I've been accused of lying, etc. However, I have never cheated or lied to him, as he so often accuses me of. What do you advise? Signed, Honest in Georgia. Dear Honest, I wish you had written to me about this when it started. If you had, I would have pointed out that people who accuse their partners of lying to them and cheating on them often have done exactly that themselves. He's accusing you of disrespect? What do you think he's been doing? Tell your accuser, abuser, that if he has proof of his accusations, he should come with you to a marriage and family therapist and discuss it, or you are going to leave him. And then, depending upon his response, follow through. Ooh, we've got another letter. Dear Abby, my grandson is transgender and gets very hurt when I misgender his name. I'm nearly 80 and use she sometimes when talking to him. I wrote him a letter at college. We exchange letters all the time. And told him my brain is old, and if I keep saying she when we talk, maybe we should just keep writing and see each other less, if often, if it keeps hurting him. Did I do the right thing? Signed, Mistaken in Massachusetts. And dear Mistaken, you may have meant well, but I don't think it was a wise choice. Unintentional misgendering is a fact of life in many families with a transgender loved one. Seeing your grandson less often is not going to cure the problem you are experiencing. Seeing him more often may give you the opportunity to become more comfortable with his true identity. And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. She's known, also known as Jean Phillips, and the column Dear Abby was founded by her mother, Pauline Phillips. And you can contact her by going to her website at www.dearabby.com. And now it's time for us to wish happy birthday to some celebrities. All right, happy birthday to actor Anthony Geary. He turns 78 today. The singer Rebby Jackson turns 75. The composer and actor Danny Elfman turns 72. The singer and actress LaToya Jackson turns 69. Actress Annette Bening turns 67. Singer and musician Melissa Etheridge turns 64 today. And singer and musician Noel Gallagher, he's with the group Oasis, he turns 58. Actress Laverne Cox turns 53. Comedian Daniel Tosh turns 50. Oh my goodness, singer and actress Mel B from the Spice Girls turns 50 today. Actor Brandon Michael Smith turns 36. And actor Riley Keough turns 36. Well, that's all the celebrities celebrating today. I guess we're at the end of our time together, so I'd better say goodbye. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. You have been listening to the second hour of the Reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, May 29th, 2025. Please enjoy this last Thursday in the month of May. Have a great day. Bye-bye.